The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a telephone conversation between an employee of an airline company and a customer. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 1 to 6.
GB Airlines, this is Kyle speaking. How can I help?
Hi, my name is Matt Walsh. I'm calling on behalf of Mr. John Sparrow to claim expenses for a delay in his flight last week.
Good morning, Mr. Walsh. Thank you for calling. Could you please tell me the flight number and the date of departure?
The date of departure was the 24th of January, 2016. I'm afraid I don't have the flight number in front of me at the moment.
Okay, that's all right. One moment. Could you tell me, where was Mr. Sparrow departing from?
He was departing from Athens.
Is that Athens, Greece, or Athens, Georgia?
Athens, Greece.
Right. And what was the destination?
It was Heathrow, London.
Right. We've got two flights from Athens to London, Heathrow, on the 24th of January 2016. Was it the 3:25 p.m. flight or the 9:45 p.m.?
It was the later one, 9:45.
Okay, so the flight number is GB1011.
Right, okay.
Okay, yes. I can see that Mr. Sparrow's flight was cancelled and he was booked on the next flight on the 25th of January at 3:25 p.m. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
According to our system, one of my colleagues spoke with Mr. Sparrow on the phone on the 24th to inform him of the cancellation and offered to book a hotel for him for the night, but Mr. Sparrow preferred to book one himself.
Yes, because he didn't want to stay near the airport, as the next flight was in the afternoon.
Yes, of course. Could you tell me which hotel he stayed at?
Yes, he stayed at the Hypnos Hotel.
Could you spell that for me?
Of course. That's H-Y-P-N-O-S.
Right. Thank you for that. And could you please tell me how much the total cost was for the night?
Sure. It was 73 euros.
Right. Do you have a copy of the receipt for that?
Yes, of course. Would you like me to send it to you?
Yes, please.
Can I email a picture of it to you?
Absolutely. The email address is refunds@gbairlines.co.uk.
Great. Thank you.
No problem. Were there any other expenses you wish to claim?
Actually, yes. There was also the taxi ride to the airport and the taxi ride back the next day.
Right. And what was the total cost?
The first taxi ride was 53 euros and the second one was 42. So 63, 73, 83. Yeah, so the total was 95 euros. I'll send you the receipt for those as well.
Thank you. Are there any other expenses?
No, I think that's it.
You now have 30 seconds to look at questions 7 to 10.
Excellent. So if you could please send us the receipts for the hotel and the taxi rides, and after we receive them, it should take about 48 hours for the funds to reach Mr. Sparrow's account.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Is there anything else I can help you with?
Actually, yes. There's one more thing. Mr. Sparrow complained about the meal during the flight. He said that it was a bit bland.
Right.
So he asked me if it was possible to switch to a different meal option for his upcoming flight to Kiev next week.
Right, of course. Just give me a minute, please. Right, I see that Mr. Sparrow had the light meal option for his flight to London, and you would like to change that. What would you like to change it to?
What are the other options?
We've got 12 different meal options. Would you like me to list all of them for you?
Well, Mr. Sparrow has told me that he would prefer something without meat. How many of these do not contain meat?
We've got 3 meal options without meat. We've got the vegetarian option, the vegan option, and the Asian vegetarian.
What's the difference?
There's a variety of different dishes served with each option. For example, next week, the vegetarian option will be a small spinach and feta cheese pie, a bread roll, a salad, and tropical fruit.
And the vegan option?
The vegan option doesn't include any dairy products, and it also doesn't include fowl, eggs, or honey. I'm afraid I don't have the specific menu for this week, but I can email it to you as soon as it becomes available.
Oh, could you do that? That would be great.
Yes, of course. I can email you a detailed description of all the meal options if you like.
Yes, please.
No problem. Please do not forget to call us back to change the meal option. You need to do that 48 hours before the departure time for international flights and 24 hours for domestic flights.
So 48 hours for this one then?
Yes, exactly.
Perfect.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Transatlantic flights require 48 hours. All flights within Europe require 24 hours. So in this case, you will need to call us 24 hours in advance. I apologize for that.
Okay, great.
So, could I please have your email address so I can send you the menus?
Certainly. It's matt.walsh@sparrowlimited.com.
That is the end of part one.
That's the end of section two. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a speech given to new employees at a museum. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 11 to 13.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Peter Myers, and on behalf of everybody here at Stevensbridge Dungeons, I would like to welcome you all to our entertainment team. This year, the hiring process was especially competitive, and it might interest you all to know that for every position there are almost 30 applicants, so you really are the best of the best. In a moment, I will take you on a tour of the museum so you can get an idea of what the space is like. But first of all, I would like to show you around the staff room. Our staff room is located at the back of the building over here. You will notice that there are two entrances to the staff room. One leads to the room we're in now, which is the main and oldest dungeon here at Stevensbridge, which we have turned into the museum. This is where you will greet the new visitors, and also where the tour throughout the dungeons will begin. I should mention now that we only ever send visitors through as part of a group. So even on the busy days, you will still get roughly 10 minutes of free time between each group. Make sure you use that time wisely, because you'll need to get straight back into character as soon as it's over.
Now look at questions 14 to 20.
Right, follow me and I'll show you the layout of the museum. From the museum, we can pass through this door near the interactive display into the staff room. From here, you can see the steps at the far side in the opposite corner that lead outside into Berwick Street. When you arrive for a shift, it will be much easier for you all to come in the Berwick Street entrance directly down the steps to the staff room. If you come in through the main visitor entrance, it will take you longer to get past security. As you can all see, there are lockers on your right-hand side. They should be big enough for you to put your bags and coats in. You'll get given keys later that work with any of the lockers in here. Over on the other side, past the lockers, is our most exciting area. This is where our wardrobe and makeup will take place. Every shift, you will be transformed from normal people into grotesque medieval prisoners. If you're lucky, you get to be the jailer, but even they rarely bathed in those days. Of course, some of you might consider yourselves method actors, but please do try to shower before your shift. We don't want to give visitors an experience that's too authentic. Now, we do have a staff shower here if you really need it. It is located next to the staff toilets, which are unisex. I hope nobody has too much of a problem with that. Unfortunately, dungeons were not really designed with comfort in mind. You can find the bathroom at the other end of the room from the makeup area. There is also another toilet for the public, concealed just to the right of the door into this room. Let's move back into the museum. We have three main sections down here. The first one you pass into when you leave the staff room is the museum. This is where all the useful information can be found, such as dates, number of prisoners, and the kinds of torture that were used. I know it's a lot of information to take in on your first day, but try to learn as much of it as you can. Even though you'll mostly be in character, visitors might want to ask you some questions, and it would be great if you could tell them more about the dungeons. I think it would be more interesting if visitors could learn directly from you rather than having to read about it. As you can see, on the left we have an interactive display for children, and on the right we have a photo booth. This was the original dungeon, first built in 1435. Now, let's pass through into the main dungeon that was added during the Tudor period in around 1570. You might be able to feel that the air is a lot damper and cooler here. That is because we are now beneath the River Stevens. This is primarily the room in which most of you will be working. This is where many high-profile religious figures were held, sometimes for years on end. Depending on the roles you'll be playing, you can either be chained up, free to roam, or, if you're a jailer, wandering between prisoners to keep an eye on them. Now we will pass into our third and final section, the prison cells. Over here, you can see there are some wooden stocks and a fake gibbet. Don't worry, I can see a couple of you looking concerned. You don't need to reenact any of the torture scenes for visitors. One person each shift will play the jailer in here, where you will give a speech to the group about some of the more notable prisoners to stay here in the past. This is usually the end of the tour, but some visitors will certainly want to ask you more questions at this point, so please try your best to make yourselves available. Help them by answering any questions they have. Also, feel free to guide the visitors through the museum if you see that they're going the wrong way. This concludes our introduction to your new workplace. If you'll please follow me, I will get you all issued with your keys and some information about the dungeons that you can take home with you to study. I will also introduce you to your shift supervisor, Alice Stiles, and you can ask her any questions you may have about your roles.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear a conversation between two students working on a presentation. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 21 to 24.
Hey Chris, thanks for coming. Are you ready to practice our presentation for tomorrow?
Yeah, just give me a moment to switch on my laptop. There we go. Okay, what do you think?
Wow, that actually looks really nice. Well done.
So I've put the title up here in the middle, Reasons People Move Out of Their Parents' Homes. I thought we could start with the general graph outlining why people fly the nest at any age, and then we could break it down to age groups and social or ethnic backgrounds before we get into how our findings fit into what sociologists say about leaving your parents' house and what the effects of the timing and the circumstances of your decision can be.
That sounds good to me. So we can start with the bar chart here. Do you think they'll be able to read the tiny letters here?
No, which is why we'll have to read them out to them.
Okay. So we could take turns then. I'd start with bar A, which says that the number one reason that young people leave home is to go to college or university.
Exactly. And then I'd go on to the second bar, which gives the number of people who said they felt smothered by their parents' control over their lives and decided to get their own house to avoid that.
Right. Then in bar C, we've got people who found a job and decided that it was a good opportunity to move away because of their new income.
Yep, and then those who didn't feel exactly smothered by their parents per se, but more so because of the lack of room in their parents' house and the fact that their parents were around pretty much 90% of the time.
Maybe we should move this bar so that it can be next to bar B, since they seem to be quite similar to each other.
Well, actually, that's why I kept them separate. But maybe you're right. They would lead smoothly into one another. So that means that jobs will now be bar D and bar E.
Bar E is about those who move because of their partner or spouse.
Right. And then at the end, we've got those who are pushed to leave by their parents and those who left because of a conflict at home.
I guess at this point, we should mention that, as expected, we had almost zero people reply that they left home because of emancipation or abuse, despite the fact that our study was conducted anonymously. Probably because the participants didn't feel confident enough to share such private details with us. Or maybe just because there was no one in our pool of participants with such experiences.
Yeah.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
So then we can break it down to age groups and show these four different graphs for our four age groups. Under 18s, 18 to 20, 21 to 24 and 25 and above.
Shall we take the graphs by age or should we start with the second group? What do you think? Because we haven't got that much data on under 18s. And starting with 25 and above would also feel a bit strange to me, seeing as it was our second smallest group, and most participants were between 18 and 24 when they moved out of their parents' home.
Yeah, you're right. Perhaps we should start with our two biggest groups and then move on to the other two.
So, you can present 18 to 20, and I can present 21 to 24. And then we can maybe present the other two groups together.
I think it's best if we present them separately, since the findings are so different.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So, I can present the under 18s, and you can present the 25 and over.
Perfect. Or, wait, should we do it the other way round so it flows more naturally?
Yeah, sure. And then we can include a brief note at the end for those who haven't moved out yet.
Yeah, great.
Excellent. So, then we can move on to the final chart before we get to the bibliography and explain what they said they found difficult when they moved out.
Yeah, so we can say the biggest issue for everyone was finding a place to live, especially for those who didn't have a guarantor or didn't live in a student hall of residence.
Yes, and that 30% of the participants also experienced some financial problems in the beginning, with bills and rent and food and everything.
Right. Then an even larger number reported that they didn't expect to miss their family that much, but ended up visiting their parents' home often just to see them and spend some time with them.
Although, we should probably cut that number down a notch to exclude those who went back home just so their parents could cook and do their laundry for them.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, then we should finish off with the final issue, which was flatmates.
Oh, yeah. So we should say that a whopping 67% complained about the people they had to live with, and that they were often dirty and inconsiderate.
Right. Great. So then we can move on to how our findings fit into...
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a lecture about geotourism.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Now, I'd like to move on to talk about something called geotourism. Geotourism is, very basically, leveraging the benefits of tourism for local communities. I would just like to give you a couple of statistics which are very illustrative of the current situation with regard to young travellers and international tourism. Firstly, tourism has an impact on more people worldwide than any other industry. Indeed, it has an impact on one in every two people, either directly or indirectly. The second statistic is that in global tourism, there is a 97% economic leakage. This means that if you spend £100 on going on holiday, normally only £3 of that money will actually reach the people who are giving you the services and the accommodation, for example, in the destination. If you put these two figures together, you can understand why some of the regions of the world which have very high levels of tourism still have very high levels of poverty and huge developmental challenges. These countries have this massive industry demanding a huge number of services, but they are not seeing a fair reward for these services. Geotourism is about changing this. Projects are now being developed with financial organisations such as the World Bank. One of these involves developing a technology platform which is bringing grassroots travel products such as hotels, locally owned hotels, not global chains, very locally owned tour operators to the international travel market, therefore avoiding the middlemen. These middlemen often cut them out of the market completely or just make their business unsustainable. Another way that geotourism can be promoted is through the niche travel market of volunteering. These days, a significant number of older teenagers want to spend a gap year, either between school and university or university and employment. Often, these people want to spend some or all of their year volunteering, but they either don't have the money or don't feel inclined to pay the main volunteering organisation businesses the fee they require, which can be as high as £3,500. What they are looking for is an organisation who can connect them with people on the ground, who can suggest worthwhile local projects. So, this is a real win-win scenario. The organisers charge a small flat fee, which then goes to the local contact. Thus, the local contact gets a very good commission just for one customer. The customer is also saving a large amount of money and time, both of which they can give to the projects they end up working on. There is still quite a long way to go before poverty in the most popular of tourist areas is eradicated, but a focus on this type of geotourism could provide an answer.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.